1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Former President Trump's campaign is calling an expanded gag order on their candidate unconstitutional. The judge in the Trump-alleged election interference porn star hush money trial is barring the former president from talking about potential witnesses and family members of the judge and district attorney, but does not stop him from talking about the judge and DA. Mr. Trump has posted the $175 million bond to appeal his financial fraud civil case through a Los Angeles-based insurance company. A narrow temporary ship channels opened at the Baltimore Bridge collapse site. This is ABC's Terry Moran, who is there.
Officials here made clear today that that work out there is going to be harder, more dangerous, and take longer than even they originally thought. Months, probably.
A federal judge in California has denied all eight of Hunter Biden's motions to dismiss his nine-count tax indictment, paving the way for a June 20th trial. A mixed day on Wall Street. This is ABC News. Today, the 144th installment of the annual White House Easter egg roll.
President Biden spoke from a balcony as hundreds of people gathered on a wet White House South lawn for the annual Easter egg roll, a tradition that dates back to 1878.
Easter reminds us of the power of hope and renewal, sacrifice and resurrection, but mainly love and grace.
The president said this year's event, with more than 40,000 attendees expected, would be the biggest celebration in history. He and the First Lady took part in a round of egg rolling with kids and greeted families on the lawn. Karen Travers, ABC News, the White House.
A human case of the bird flu has been identified in Texas and linked to sick cattle. Health officials stress there have been no reports of person-to-person spreading of the disease. This is the second human case bird flu ever reported in the U.S., but the first linked to cattle. Tonight's Powerball jackpot over $1 billion. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Donald Trump campaigns in Wisconsin Tuesday night. His national press secretary won't say whether the former president will announce any political endorsements in Green Bay. Caroline Levitt tells WISN-TV's Upfront that Trump will unveil his agenda. Both Trump and President Biden have already clinched their party's nominations. The Wisconsin primary is also Tuesday. Children in Wisconsin from low-income homes will get nutritious food this summer. Wisconsin will take part in the federal Summer Electronic Benefit Transfer Program. Qualifying families will get preloaded debit cards to use to buy groceries.
We've got families with low incomes, most of them working, by the way, but just not able to put that extra meal on the table for kids who are at home during the summer months.
Shelley Fortner is with the Hunger Task Force of La Crosse. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers sweep the Mets. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 4-1 win to complete a three-game sweep of the Mets. On Saturday, Mets pitcher Johan Ramirez ejected for throwing a wild pitch at Milwaukee's Reese Hoskins a day after his hard slide into second base.
And that one sails over his head.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if there was intent involved.
Oh, boy.
They just threw Ramirez out of the game.
Oh, wow.
The Mets manager, Carlos Mendoza, suspended one game. Ramirez appealing a three-game suspension. The Brewers, Rhys Hoskins.
People boo you. People doubt you. People do whatever they do. Big leaguers don't miss by 8 feet.
NBA, the Bucks with a win in Atlanta over the weekend. They play the Wizards tomorrow night. College basketball, the Badgers women's team in the WNIT Grade 8. They host St. Louis in the Kohl Center tonight.
Obviously really excited for our players and the program to be able to take another step that we're trying to accomplish.
That's Wisconsin's women's head coach, Marissa Mosley. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A mix of rain and snow tonight, with temperatures remaining steady in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, rain and snow showers around, highs into the upper 30s. Then a winter storm watch is in effect Tuesday afternoon through Wednesday afternoon as the wind picks up with 6 to 12 inches of snow accumulation possible. Right now it's 33.
Tuesday on the Maggie Dawn Show, it is a spring 2024 election special. Don't miss it. We got a bunch of candidates coming in to talk all things election.
Your home for Mino and the Mayor in the Morning. Weekdays from 6 till 8. Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, hit me, cut it, dude.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Karagiwina, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, you two, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
You know, I say this every show, but we have a special show today. We got Wendy showing up, and we've been on the air for 7 years now, and it's an amazing ride, and you're one of the founders, and we think back when we started at the studio out in Eden Prairie, and Choka did a prayer beforehand and smudged us off, and here we are 7 years later, Wen.
It's amazing. I can't believe it. That it doesn't seem that long. It really doesn't.
No. Well, you know, we got a couple things we want to talk about. I think we might have Dr. Stately stopping in today. He might be at the beach because it's damn near 70 degrees here in Minnesota, Wendy.
That's unbelievable. I was escaping St. Paul, Minnesota, to come to New York, where it's generally a little bit warmer this time of year, like in February. The high and the average temperature is around 40 degrees. So, you know, the people here think that that is so cold and they bundle up. They even put sweaters on their dogs. But for me, 40 degrees is a really nice temperature.
Hey, you two, Wendy, I want to give a quick shout out to our friend Maureen Hackett, Wendy. We've known her for, she was like, Hauling for Wolves was like one of our first sponsors here.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Happy birthday, Dr. Maureen Hackett. Thank you for everything that you do, and thank you for supporting Native Roots Radio.
So, Haley, what sign is the doctor?
Oh, yes. Well, her birthday, so that means she's a Pisces, which is my favorite because that's I'm a Pisces.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Happy birthday.
And Haley's birthday's coming up, too, and I don't know if you're registered anywhere, but let our audience know so they can hook you up with a party, with a gift.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I should get a little registry going for all of you out there.
Well, one of the things I also want to bring up, too, we talked a little bit about before the show, is the Ho-Chunk Museum in Wisconsin, building right down the road, not that far away, maybe two or three buildings away, burned down. And all those artifacts, Winnebago and Ho-Chunk artifacts in the museum were really at risk in the nation. I have to give a shout out to the Ho-Chunk people, came in hundreds out there and helped evacuate all the art and all the beading and all the things that are irreplaceable. So I just want to give a quick big shout out to the Ho-Chunk Nation citizens and the people that helped out with that big fire at the museum.
Yeah, that was scary. And to see that on social media, I know President John Greendeer was there going live, and just to see it is so scary. I haven't been to the museum in person yet myself, so I was concerned. Like, I know it's in that building where they're all connected, different businesses. So It was scary. And you know, it was really, I was happy to hear that Governor Tony Evers had reached out directly to Ho-Chunk President John Greendeer, as well as the museum.
Can't say enough about him. He's really pro-Native and a lot of really good things with Governor Evers. And, of course, he sends us a weekly and biweekly update here on Native Roots Radio, and really appreciative of that. Wendy, I don't know, we got a few minutes here, and we've kind of talked a little bit in the last few days here on Native Roots Radio about the Alabama IVF deal, and I know, like, all the politicians know that that's not a good thing, and you even have Trump and Republicans disavowing what they did.
Yeah, it's really sad to hear it. I mean, literally, my blood is boiling. We have family members, and I have friends who needed to, you know, go through the route of IVF to be able to have children, to be able to become parents. You know, one out of six couples in the United States right now have problems with infertility. So we really have to be careful about who we put into office, who we're voting for, what policies that they support and don't support. We need to put people into office who are going to support women and support women's rights. There are people in Alabama right now, couples in Alabama right now, who have frozen embryos and who are going through treatment right now. This treatment, you know, if I know family members who have gone through it, this is emotionally, physically, mentally draining. And now that they can't do anything right now, their treatment is stopped. The problem is also that they can't even move their embryos out of Alabama and bring them to a different state to continue their treatment. It just stopped. Like, everything just stopped. And they have to wait to see what the court is finally going to rule on. But why should a court anywhere in the United States or elsewhere rule on whether a family, a couple, could have a child through IVF and with their embryos? You know, a chicken egg is not a chicken. A seed is not a flower. An embryo is not a child. It's really very upsetting. I just want to say this too. If you're out there and you vote Republican and you have children or you have grandchildren through the means of IVF, you are voting against them. And that is my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wendy, we have Dr. Stately on listening in too, and he can jump in if you'd like. But I feel like, and I know I shouldn't say the word I feel like, because we got those videos you're sending me on how to talk. But I believe that this is an attack on women, and this is unbelievable. Yes. So when you say make America great again, they're not talking about the 50s. I think they're talking about the 20s, the 1920s. It's crazy. Hey, Dr. Stately.
I think it could possibly be the 1800s.
Yeah. Seriously.
You know, we're talking Little House on the Prairie type interventions here. anyway, that was probably a bad analogy, actually, given the fact that we live in Minnesota and we know what they did to Minnesota. So, anyway.
Right.
But yes, hi. Hello. Yes, it's true. Egg is not a chicken. In fact, we don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg. And, I just had that conversation with my kids the other day.
I was just gonna say, did you hear that on that other station or something? That was profound there.
No, no. but I did say, like, you know, well, I think that probably, I don't know, it could be like, you know, what do you call it? Considered narcissistic, perhaps, for me to say this comment. But if I were creator, I probably would make the chicken first.
Mm.
Because then, you know, then it could lay eggs.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Dr. Stately, you know,
and then I told him, I said, well, actually, the chicken didn't come first. First, there were dinosaurs, and then those evolved into chickens and other birds that we have. So, just to be clear, like, you know, just this craziness that we're talking about. Like, you know, we evolve as human beings, even if they are operating with their 1920s brain, we are in the 2021s. Or 2020s. Like, evolve, people, evolve.
Exactly. Hey, we're with this is a reunion show with Wendy Pilot and Dr. Stately, Haley, and myself. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex. Recording sexual acts without permission. Hurting someone because of their sexual orientation. Ripping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger. Purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
As we pack away the ornaments and bid farewell to the holiday season, it's time to unwrap the gift that keeps on giving, getting protected by a COVID-19 vaccination. This is your chance to make a difference, especially as our Native communities face higher COVID numbers. Those higher numbers underscore the need for collective action. So answer the call and get vaccinated. The latest vaccines are not just authorized, but they're proven effective against the current variants. This is extra protection, even if you've already had previous vaccines, since previous vaccines will eventually wear off. Plus, the new shots are FDA approved for ages 6 months and up. A COVID vaccine is not just a shot. It's a pledge to safeguard the wisdom and stories handed down by our elders. So join the movement, get vaccinated, and make 2024 the healthiest year ever, securing a brighter future for our Native community. For more information, including details about clinics offering free vaccines, visit vaccines.gov.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by All My Relations Arts and their current gallery exhibit, O'Keezy, in partnership with the American Swedish Institute, running now until April 13th at 1414 East Franklin Avenue, Minneapolis.
Hey, we're having the reunion show here with Wendy Pilot and Dr. Stately. Before we get going here a little bit, I just got a text from our friend, State Representative Heather Keeler, and she wants to remind listeners that tomorrow are the caucuses. Get involved in local democracy. Protect Minnesota so we don't become Alabama. So she's been listening to our conversation. Big shout out to State Representative Heather Keeler, who you saw that, Haley and Wendy. I did not call her Senator Heather Keeler.
Yeah, good job.
Thank you.
I did notice that.
Thank you. Hey, Wendy, this is an opportunity for you maybe to ask Dr. Stately some questions here, because you two haven't been on together in quite a while.
Well, what I always like to ask Dr. Stately is to talk about what he likes to talk about. That's what I like to ask Dr. Stately. Yeah. So whatever is on his mind and whatever he wants to talk about, that's what that's what's most important.
Exactly.
Well, thank you. Well, that's thoughtful. Thank you. Not that you're not thoughtful, Robert. But I was, I don't know, I'm thinking about a couple of different things. Like there's, I got big projects that I'm working on right now. But one of the things that's, I think is top of mind. So I was on a a round table this morning, earlier today with Governor Walz and Angie Craig. And I was with a group of people from the community. I was sitting to my left was Shakopee Police Chief talking about the work that they're doing in Shakopee to sort of kind of address the opioid crisis and the overdose crisis. And, you know, on my right was a young woman named Hannah who works with a organization called, Be the Change or something like that. And they're working with schools and trying to get schools to support and distribute Narcan to their students and have Narcan available within their schools. One of the other panelists was Holly, what was her name? I have her name. Holly was an amazing woman. Her son, Bridget Noring is the founder and president of the Devin Noring Foundation. Her son was a 19-year-old senior in high school who died of an overdose in Hastings. And, this is a small community that one of the things she talked about was she came from a small community then they didn't really even know what Narcan was. They didn't understand what fentanyl was. They had no knowledge of these things. And like, I think one of the reasons I was on the panel was to talk a little bit about the work that NAC has been doing to address the opioid crisis in our community in South Minneapolis and across the state is, through cultural healing and spiritual care services and doing culturally centered models of services around medication-assisted treatment and harm reduction services and street outreach. And it was a really awesome talk, but one of the things that's really disturbing is that, like, and I just read an article about this a couple weeks ago in the news, and also a research article that shows that the number of overdoses for children under the age of 18 is significantly climbing in the United States. And we surpassed 1 million overdose deaths this year, right? And I think it's over the life of the epidemic. But one of the police chief to my left, he made the comment. He said, we have he goes, I've been to the Vietnam Memorial, and he goes and saw all those names on the memorial, and he goes, we are at the place in time where we have now lost like the equivalent of two Vietnam War victims due to the opiate crisis. And so to be having these conversations about, like, should we have teenagers and kids in school having Narcan, because even though the state passed a law about this, there are still a lot of schools and a lot of other institutions that are reluctant and reticent about allowing children to have Narcan because it's considered to be a medicine or a medication, those kinds of things. And I wanted to make this statement on the panel, and I just, like, got busy talking about the work we're doing, but it dawned on me, like I said, the problem that we're having here is, like, we can't have a conversation, and we need to have the kind of conversation we need to be having at decision-making tables among policymakers and families and in schools and with school districts and principals and those kinds of things, is to recognize a couple of different things. One is, like, Narcan and naloxone. These are things that prevent us from people from dying from fentanyl and opioid poisoning, right? A lot of times, sometimes, especially if it's a younger person, they don't know that the fentanyl is inside the thing. So it's not intentional that they're taking the drug. Sometimes it's snuck into some other form of something. And I said, I want you to all just think about, you know, because I think, you know, we're all like, you know, probably in our 40s, 50s, 60s here, the people in the rooms, not everybody's that age, but certainly a lot of the policymakers, right? And I said, does anybody remember back in the day when you could drive a car without a seatbelt? And you could drive in your car and have your kids in the back seat without a seatbelt, without a car seat, and all these other things. Like, well, we know that, like, you know, there's simple practices and things that we can do to save people's lives, right? Like, we know through evidence and a bunch of other things that, you know, something as simple as putting a seatbelt on, putting our kid in the car seat and driving them with a car seat, that this saves lives, right? And you know, just think of the number of lives that were saved from a simple intervention. So comparatively, think of naloxone and Narcan the same way. It's not going to harm somebody to have naloxone. There's nothing that's actually going to harm somebody if they accidentally take Narcan, right? It's an opioid inhibitor or agonist. So to have this policy and this practice and this mindset of like, oh, we shouldn't give Narcan to children, it could be harmful. Well, there's nothing they can actually do to somebody else, another human being, even if it was accidental. And so many children live with parents who are other adults around them who are older siblings who are using opioids either accidentally or purposefully. And it's like we are not going to work our way out of this condition and this situation if we are not prioritizing saving people's lives. Like, you cannot get anybody to recover if they're dead. You don't have an opportunity to help somebody, you know, get back on a path of like well-being and recovery if they're deceased. It's a tremendous loss of life. And here we are 20 years into this epidemic, and it is just gutting the 19 to 34 year old sort of group of individuals. Like, we are just seeing these holes in our communities where parents and are not able to raise their children because they're orphaning them, right? Grandparents are raising them, other people are raising them. So it's like in this discussion, I said, like, if you care about children, like, give them the tools that they need to do to sort of kind of manage a world that the world they live in now. Like, you might not have contended with this when you were a child, but the world as we know it today is so incredibly different than the one I grew up in, the one that you grew up in. Mm-hmm. And it's not right for us to not allowing children to have access to life-saving opportunities for their peers, for themselves, for their family members, and the people they love. And it's not harmful at all. It's actually the best. It's, you know, it's an act of love to give that to them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And especially, you know, Minnesota becoming legal in marijuana just in a nick of time, because fentanyl's been put marijuana in now, or fentanyl's been in marijuana lately. So people can take that.
Did you mean to say right in the nicotine of time? I thought you guys said you heard you say nicotine of time.
Oh. Is that a pun? What? What?
I get it. I get it.
Cool. Well, and I agree, and that's so important. And when you were talking about that, I was thinking of when I was young, and it's like, we had a lot of stuff that our parents didn't agree with. And I mean, I'm sure the kids nowadays do too. Why not have something that can help and save somebody?
Yeah, I think it's directly tied to like this idea we have in our society as like, you know, demonizing and stigmatizing drug users. Like, they're somehow defective and they're somehow different than me, right? And I said this in the roundtable. I said, like, nobody comes to this earth out of their mother's womb the birth canal with the desire to become a drug addict. They don't come out of the womb desiring to be homeless, desiring mm-hmm. to be mentally ill, desiring to have a life of, you know, of challenges and a life of, you know, just sheer despair. Nobody wants that. They don't come with that. There's a bunch of stuff that happens to us in our life trajectory that causes that. And that's what we have to deal with.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Stately. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and we're going to be right back right after this short break. Stay with us.
Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Former President Trump's campaign is calling an expanded gag order on their candidate unconstitutional. The judge in the Trump-alleged election interference porn star hush money trial is barring the former president from talking about potential witnesses and family members of the judge and district attorney, but does not stop him from talking about the judge and DA. Mr. Trump has posted the $175 million bond to appeal his financial fraud civil case through a Los Angeles-based insurance company. A narrow temporary ship channels opened at the Baltimore Bridge collapse site. This is ABC's Terry Moran, who is there.
Officials here made clear today that that work out there is going to be harder, more dangerous, and take longer than even they originally thought. Months, probably.
A federal judge in California has denied all eight of Hunter Biden's motions to dismiss his nine-count tax indictment, paving the way for a June 20th trial. A mixed day on Wall Street. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Critics of President Biden's Gaza policy are urging Wisconsin Democrats to vote uninstructed in Tuesday's presidential primary. Activists say they're only focused on the primary for now.
This is an opportunity to make our demands clear and to let Joe Biden know that unless he has a serious change on policy in Gaza, his chances in November are bleak.
Heba Muhammad of the group Listen to Wisconsin spoke with WISN-TV's Up Front. The Milwaukee Brewers' home opener is Tuesday, which figures because there'll be 4 or 5 inches of snow on the ground. That total might be lower depending on how much rain's mixed with the snow. The American Family Field parking lot opens just after noon for tailgating. Gates to the ballpark open after 1, and the first pitch is at 3:10. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Earl Ingram.
Let's talk a little bit about what public education did to move this nation forward and continues to do, even though it's under assault.
The one place where we get to live out and practice what it means to be a citizen in a democratic institution. The attacks on public education are really attacks on democracy.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A mix of rain and snow tonight with temperatures remaining steady in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, rain and snow showers around, highs into the upper 30s. Then a winter storm watch is in effect Tuesday afternoon through Wednesday afternoon as the wind picks up with 6 to 12 inches of snow accumulation possible. Currently 35 degrees.
The Todd Alba Show.
Former state senator and majority leader in the state senate, Dale Schultz.
Legislators aren't doing their job. But what I would ask all the listeners is, have you taken stock in your legislator? Do they really deserve to be there? Do they really want to be there in a polite way? Ask them to come and share a vision, listen to you, and say we want regular communication. And I think if we do that, the system will serve us very well.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for Matt and Air on Air.
Always a good time when you stop in at Ooga Brewing in Beaver Dam. Events this month include live music with Andy Brown, 6 to 9 p.m. April 12th on 420. It's live music with Poverty and Panic from 6 to 10. And don't forget Music Bingo starting at 6:30 p.m. April 2nd. Then Music Bingo Taylor's version on April 16th at 6:30 p.m. It's all happening at Ooga Brewing Company, located at 301 South Spring Street, part of Beaver Dam's vibrant downtown.
Say it with me, the Boxing Six. And you could catch every play, every score, every Milwaukee Bucks game on Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, 1100 AM, 98.3 FM. Your station for the Milwaukee Bucks, your hometown radio refreshed.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. And on the Civic Media app. Your home for the Devil's Advocates, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1, U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Just a quick shout out to Leonard Peltier, the longest serving political prisoner in United States history. This past weekend, there was a celebration, too, of the occupation of Wounded Knee, the 51st anniversary this past week. And I just want to give everybody a shout out that went to Wounded Knee and all the people that occupied those 73 days in 1973. Hey, we're here with Dr. Stately and Wendy Pilot and Haley Cherry. We're kind of talking, kind of roundtabling it right now. And I just have to say this, Wendy. I always say, in honor of Wendy, I always say, what would you like to talk about? So that's in honor of Wendy being on in here. Dr. Stately, what else would you like to talk about?
Well, I mean, I think that that's a robust discussion. One of the things I didn't get to say at that roundtable, which I think is a really important conversation starter, and I think I want, my hope is that I can, you know, help sort of advocate for families to be thinking about this and talking about it at the, you know, at the dinner table, at the, you know, at the bingo table, the card table, any table you're going to be at in the near future, like when you're with gathering with your relatives, you know, have an intentional conversation about, you know, the scale of need in our community around houselessness. It is probably one of the defining moments in our time in history. I had a conversation with a young man that we, NAC is, you know, as you know, is building a new building. We're in the process of sort of like, you know, raising the funding for our new clinic with the four floors of housing that we're going to build above it. And one of the conversations I was having late last week was with a young man that we're hiring to sort of kind of be our owner's rep in that project. And that person's job is just going to hold all of the pieces with all the different contractors and all the different architectural groups. Like, you know, there's a lot of specificity for housing architecture, there's a lot of specificity for clinic design and closet. Oh, I just saw the Dakota. Oh, weird. On the Dakota land bus drive by. That's pretty cool. Down Franklin Avenue. One of the things that I was talking about, that, and he's a non-Indigenous man, so he was asking me questions about South Minneapolis and about the corridor and about, like, you know, give me a little bit more context about the houselessness issue here in South Minneapolis with Native people. And I said, well, and he told the story about how he had been working with a tribe in Montana, and early in his career, and he had gone there to help them with a project, and they were looking at building some stuff nestled into the mountains of outside of Browning. And he was talking to some of the tribal people there, and he said, I asked him, like, well, why did you build these houses out here out on the plains, like, where you're a little bit more vulnerable to some of the elements and stuff like that? He goes, and your housing is going to really be challenged. And so he goes, and he said, an elder turned to him and said, do you think we picked this land to live on? right? Indicating, like, you know, the idea of, like, you know, reservation life. It's a form of forced assimilation and relocation, right? And so I reminded him of his earlier statement. I said, well, do you think the Native people chose South Minneapolis to live in the 50s when we were incentivized by relocation, failed federal assimilationist policy, right, to relocate us to the urban area, leave our communities, leave our families, leave our social support system back home, go to a new place, a shiny city that promised jobs and education and economic stability and new homes and this amazing life. And of course, when we got here, we got none of that, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, we ended up here in South Minneapolis, which is an area that was originally settled by the Norwegian people who immigrated here early, right, and settled some of this area. And it was no longer desirable. And this is why how we and a lot of the Black and other people ended up in this area. And then they put a highway and a couple of highways and a couple of freeways through our community and created all mm-hmm. kinds of challenges for us. So we ended up in this situation, not by our own choice and certainly by the design, either intentional or unintentional and unthinking design of people who made decisions at the policy level to sort of, like, you know, think of us as throwaway community, like you can do whatever you want to those people there. And so I think it's important that you understand that historical context, that arc. I said, but here's the other thing I want you not to lose sight of. Like, the cultural corridor is a representation of our strength and our resilience as Indigenous people. Yes, we had all these things happen to us, but anything and everything that's pretty much been significantly large and meaningful in Minnesota or across the United States, Indian Education, Indian Child Welfare Act, American Indian Movement, all those things, they started here because the people got tired and they rose up. Mm-hmm. And look what we created. We created this amazing cultural corridor with mm-hmm. tremendous rich history and a history of community engagement and community organizing and activism that has, like, built 26 to 30 organizations across the Twin Cities that serve our community. No other city in the United States has that. Wow. Has that infrastructure. That's who we are, and that's who we will rise up. We will come out of this, and we will rise up, and we will rebuild our community, and we will rebuild our city. And guess what? When we do that, the city will benefit. All of the other people around us, they'll benefit from it as well.
Absolutely. You know, when we do better, we all do better.
Everybody,
you know,
yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
does better. Great words, Dr. Stately, and great work that you're doing on the corridor too, the Native corridor. We love going there. We love going to the art, see art, go to the coffee shop, and see our relatives.
Relations gallery.
Yeah, and you know.
Yeah, it's getting warm out. Pretty soon, the Four Sisters Market's going to open up. I'm going to see you every single Thursday. I'm going to be there.
That's right. That's right. And then, well, tomorrow it's supposed to snow, but today was a glorious day.
Yeah, well, you know, kind of a, like that weird in between. I say there's, like, Minnesota now has five seasons. Maybe three, kind of depending on your perspective. But, you know, you got your fall, you got your winter, you got your in-between winter and summer or spring, and then you got your spring, and then you got, like, you know, two weeks of spring, and then you got 9 months of summer, or maybe the other way around. I don't know. Anyway, the point is there's a fifth season there. It's called the in-between season.
Well, normally we don't have the 9 months of summer, but we're kind of looking at that this way. It's usually 2 months,
yeah,
right?
This year it feels like 9 months of summer. It's like we had 2 weeks of winter.
Good thing Wendy has this bee garden out in front, or I'd have to be cutting the grass again here soon, right, Wen?
Yeah.
That's right. I'm just a little worried about all our little bugs and pollinators. I don't want them to wake up right now because there's no food for them. There's no flowers for them. Yeah. There's nothing for them, and they'll die. So, and then I get worried, like, people are going to get antsy and they want to, like, you know, clean up their yard, and then they get the leaf blowers out and blow away all the little creatures that are still underneath the leaves trying to survive. So just hold off on it.
Yeah.
I see some trees.
You know what I just heard? I heard you give me permission to not do a damn thing in my yard for several
years. No Monet. Don't do anything until June 1st.
The weather and the temperature
are consistently over 50 degrees for at least 2 weeks. You could do that.
I'm with you. I'm going to sit on my couch until June 1st watching, you know, Netflix and eating bonbons. And then if anybody ever criticizes me, I'm going to say, well, Wendy Pilot said I should not do anything.
That's right. It was on the radio. It was, you know.
It was on the radio. These are facts.
Yeah. Right. Well, exactly. I know I appreciate no mo summer. That's one thing off my chores. But, It is the resilience of our people and our allies that have helped us through these things. Because, like, when you talk about the government changing and looking into this, we need our allies too to understand what's going on, and we appreciate them.
Absolutely do. I was having a conversation with some young person. I won't say their name because, you know, they're entitled to some anonymity.
Text me.
If they're listening, they know who they are. So we were talking about, like, you know, how they're like, oh, I don't want to have children. This world is going to collapse and end. Where, you know, the earth is just going to, like, we're destroying the earth. It's going to die. Mm. I was like, I just want to wake you up to something here, sweetheart. I said, the earth probably isn't going to die. We'll die. Right. We're going to die. But the earth, she is powerful and she is amazing and she is going to regenerate herself. And We have some decisions to make now as human beings. Do we want to be on this planet or do we not want to be here? Because I'm pretty sure that the earth is going to take care of herself.
Right.
Right. And we have to make some decisions now about whether or not we still want to be here in, you know, 100 years or 200 years or 300 years. We got to make some of those decisions now. So,
absolutely.
Like, you know, don't be mistaken. The earth is going to be fine.
Yep.
We're going to be gone.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people have that misnomer too. And it's like, no, Mother Earth will cleanse itself after maybe a couple hundred years.
Well, I mean, you know, read the Bible, read a few other things. There's been a lot of cataclysmic things that have, like, you know, erased human life forms off of the earth, right? So, like, you know, she has a way of taking care of herself when we don't treat her well. So, like, you know, just try to remember that.
Well, I always said that I'm glad I'm my age that I am right now, the way things are going. But now Wendy and I have, it's been official on Facebook today that we have grandchildren coming. So now I have to renege on that. And our Weeha, Jelaine, and Micah are having a boy and a girl. And I'm going to call them Robert and Bobby. Ho! Hey, Dr. Stately.
I like the name Anthony.
Yeah. Hey, Dr. Stately, thanks for coming on, and we'll see you soon. Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. Up next, Wendy with their sacred animal section. We'll be right back. Hey, if you're like a lot of people, you're probably relieved that the holiday celebrations are over. But there's one thing that might stay with us from the holidays besides all those gifts, and that's COVID-19. Numbers from COVID are going up as we spend more time inside. And Native Americans are seeing even bigger case spikes. With all the indoor celebrations over the holidays, you may have unknowingly been exposed to someone with COVID-19. That's why it's important to stay vigilant. If you notice any symptoms like a fever, a tickle in the throat, or heavy fatigue, take an at-home test. They're still free and can be ordered at sayyeshometest.org. If you do test positive, you're eligible for free treatment. And no health insurance is required. Visit health.state.mn.us to connect with providers and receive your treatment. Let's make 2024 the healthiest year ever, securing a brighter future for our Native community. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Now is a perfect and exciting time to plan your next National Eagle Center adventure. When you visit this winter season, you can meet and learn all about the newest bald eagle ambassador, Perseus. Plus, the center is your headquarters for winter eagle information and experiences, including weekly winter bald eagle counts, golden eagle information, unforgettable expert-led field trips, and small group private eagle habitat tours for your family and friends. Make eagles part of your 2024 and plan your visit or experience today online at nationaleaglecenter.org.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Hey, I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy. Wendy's been an animal advocate for many years, and she's a co-founder of this Native Roots radio show back 7 years ago. And she discusses our sacred animals, and people just love this. I have people coming up to me all the time. When we were at the AM 950 little get-together with listeners, they were all asking about you and telling me how much they enjoy your segment. So it's great to have you on a Wednesday and on a Monday, I mean, and take it away, Wendy. I don't know what day it is, right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what day, because you know what? Sometimes we re-air our segments, so it could be Friday for all we know, right? Hey, everybody, my name is Kanaji Hihani. That means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajingo, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. It's always my pleasure to do that. I am in New York, and I've been here for a little while, but I wanted to, in the news here in New York, people have been talking about a bird named Flaco. Now, Flaco is a Eurasian eagle owl who escaped from New York City Central Park last year. And Flaco, somebody vandalized his cage and made a big hole in the netting where he was in. And Flaco got out. And for the past year, he's lived in Central Park. Now, this Eurasian eagle owl had brought people from all over to come to find him and see him and get their binoculars out and look at him in Central Park. Birders, people who like birds, all came around to see this beautiful bird. And the people at the zoo were really worried about him because they didn't know whether he could survive or not, because he's been kept in captivity for his whole life. We'll talk about zoos a different day. All I want to say about zoos is, you know what, when I was a kid, I loved zoos because I loved animals. But as an adult, I hate zoos because I love animals. And that's all I'm going to say about that right now. Getting back to Flaco, so the zoo decided that it would really be more dangerous for Flaco and people if they tried to engage and try to capture him to bring him back to the zoo. So they were just like, well, let's see what happens. We'll keep our fingers crossed and let Flaco live in New York City Central Park. And Flaco did. Flaco had a great life for a year. I'm sure he had lots of trials and tribulations. Hopefully he helped the rat and mice population, right? And that's how he kind of survived. But what I want to bring up here is that they found, unfortunately, they found Flaco dead, and they didn't know really what happened. Like, they were like, oh my God, how did this beautiful Eurasian owl eagle die. So they were worried about rodenticides because there's a lot of pesticides and rodenticides trying to get rid of the mice and rat population in New York City. So they thought maybe he got a mouse or a rat that was already poisoned with rodenticides. But after an autopsy, they discovered that Flaco flew into glass into the building, and that's how Flaco passed away. So, of course, this brings up like a lot of controversy about what to do, what should we do in New York City, what should we do around the world to help protect these birds. I have a couple of statistics here. Let me just find here. So Flaco is among the estimated 1 billion birds that will die this year in the United States after striking buildings. That's a lot of birds. A billion birds is a lot of birds. Building strikes are one of the main causes of death for birds. I didn't know that either.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought it was maybe cats. You know, people let their cats out. And that is a high number, too. I don't have the number in front of me, but it is. One of the easiest threats to solve, according to Christine Shepherd, director of the Glass Collisions Program at the American Bird Conservatory, is to fix the glass on the windows. There's been a lot of windows, and since 2019, New York City put a law in that any new building put up has to have specially treated windows to prevent these bird strikes. So I'm really happy about that. But we all know New York City is an older city, and most cities in the United States were built before 2019. But a lot of buildings have put these, you know, panes up on the window, like just sheer clear. I don't know what it is, if it's plastic or what it's made out of, but it has like a pattern on it so that the birds don't mistake in the glass for a reflection that they see. That's what happens, or what they see inside the building. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting reading this article because It really told me that it's not the really big high rises that are the problem. It's the low rise buildings that the birds fly into. And it's really during their migratory period. And a lot of the bird strikes also happen at night. So a lot of cities, a study published in the Wilson Journal of Ornithology concluded that between 621 million and 1.7 billion birds die in the United States each year because of building strikes. New York City's Audubon scientists estimate that about 250,000 birds die in the city each year after such collisions. The problem is most acute during the spring and fall migratory air times, and mainly affects small migratory songbirds. And then it said, what kind of buildings are the most dangerous? And it is the shorter buildings, which I was surprised to hear about. Windows that are less than 100 feet from the ground are most likely to reflect vegetation and to give birds the impression of flying towards a tree or open sky. So that's why, birds don't see glass. Jessica Wilson, executive director of New York City's Audubon, said what they see is what's on the other side or what's reflected. So Flaco was nearly 14 years old and had lived most of his life at the Central Park Zoo. He had roamed free since last February after someone cut an open of the mesh on his enclosure. And it was an act of vandalism, and they never found out who did that. It's kind of a little bit of a sad story here, but it also is bringing awareness about what needs to be done with the buildings and how people can, you know, if you live in a migratory area where there's lots of songbirds, You might, I've never seen, like at our house in St. Paul, I've never seen any dead birds around our house, so that I would not suspect that a bird would fly into any of our windows. But if I did find dead birds around our house and suspected that that could be the cause, I would definitely put up those sheets on my windows so that there would be, the birds wouldn't be able to see that reflection of the trees and think that they were flying into trees. But rest in peace, Flaco. I'm glad that you had a year of freedom, and now you are really free to fly wherever you'd like.
Wow, good call, Wendy. Really, thank you so much, Pini Gigi, Wendy, and Pini Gigi for being on the show all that night, just like old times.
Yeah.
Hey, we're still here. We are the seventh generation.
And free Leonard Peltier.
Peltier. Now.
Right on.
From the home of the largest fly-in in the world, we are Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM, WISS. Streaming on the Civic Media app.